Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Beauty, decadence, sweat, contradiction, pain, agony, beauty, poetry, love of the Rolling Stones.
All right, Patrick, we're down to the final three.
This is it, man.
Drum roll. Rolling Stones favorites. Yes, here on Rockin' the Suburbs, I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And as I mentioned all week, I mean, go back and listen to the episodes. If you don't come in now,
right?
It's like, you know, jumping ahead to the end of the book, right? Yeah. So, what we've been doing is counting down listener favorites based on a poll, a very scientific poll.
Yeah, very scientific, and our most participated in, and the most different songs got votes.
Yeah. Okay, before we get into the top three, is there any other business we need to take care of?
No, I think we're good.
All right, everybody having a good time?
Yeah. Right. Thank you guys for coming.
So we're hanging out here at Mike Wagner's house in Northern Virginia, and we have several friends here, and it's just lovely. It's just lovely.
It's very accommodating. Thank you, yes. Mike.
Top three. Let's get to number three here. Sticky Fingers, 1971. Another one on the countdown that was not released as a single.
Right.
Yet it's number three.
Wow. Here,
right. I'm really interested to hear what people have to say about this.
Yep.
I mean, I think this is a great song, but it seems like it's just grown in popularity.
I would
over
definitely
the years,
say
right?
So. Yeah.
And
yep.
The other thing, too, is, and I don't know why that is, so I'm curious what people think. Yesterday, we talked a little bit about sort of the Gram Parsons, the sort of little country influence that was coming into the Stones. I mean, it's right here in spades, right?
It's the best time they ever did it, in my opinion. Yeah.
I also want to say that somebody earlier in the week said that the Stones kind of maybe stopped with the dark material at some point. Well, maybe not entirely.
This was pretty dark.
Exactly. What are your thoughts here on Dead Flowers?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's one of my all-time favorite Stone songs. When I first heard the couplet, when you're sitting back in your rose pink Cadillac making bets on Kentucky Derby Day, my mind was blown to like another degree. Like, I didn't think there could be anything more savage and coolly detached and amazing, you know, with that music in my whole life. And then the amazing version of Dead Flowers by Townes Van Zandt that's not only in The Big Lebowski, but on one of his records, you know. And I think The Big Lebowski was a part of it,
I
too.
I wondered if that was part of it.
And that version is just so amazing. Townes lived it and felt it. You know, he was right there with every single line on that song. I think you're right. Somehow it is attained a mythical stature that just making it grow and grow and grow. And I mean, I know earlier I said I couldn't play any Rolling Stone song, but this is one I can actually play because it's just A D G. That's it. Man.
I know that because
yeah,
I
exactly
we I've can... played it as well. Yeah, exactly, exactly. The other thing I want to say, we've mentioned before, there was talk about Charlie Watts and what a great drummer he was. He really brings the swing on this song.
Whew. Another beautiful mid-tempo Charlie performance. Yeah.
Kevin Goff is standing up, but I think it's apparently to take a photo. I don't know why anyone would want to do that.
Right.
Okay, Dead Flowers. What do you guys think? Why is it so popular? Why is it one of the favorites? Yeah, Brad. Oh, Brad Mailer.
Now we're talking.
I really just wanted to...
Have a seat, Brad.
No. I really just wanted to chime in and say that Patty got it right and that it's like one of those songs that actually people know how to play. And that's what makes it popular. Like so many bands when I was growing up and, you know, like everybody just plays this song and everybody loves it for the same reason.
Great point. It's a great point. Yeah, you can be in a bar on a Friday night right. and hear a band play it and you're going to just get happier.
It's kind of a campfire song too.
In some ways,
Yeah.
And it's fun to sing along to.
Mike Snyder.
Well, there's so many ways you could be pulled into this song. If you're, like you mentioned alt country earlier, I mean, if you'd never heard this song but you knew alt country bands, you would end up eventually coming back to this song. If you're a country music fan, you hear pedal steel guitars. This is a perfect capture of country and rock. You know, in a 3-and-however-many-minute long song it is. And it's just, like you said, it's easy to play because even I can sing this song. You know, I've been lucky enough to play with, you know, some of the people that are here tonight. And everybody loves this song, no matter... I really did not think it would be in the top 5. I knew it would probably be in the top 15, but I'm really surprised, and I think it's... whether it's the movie or just that we've lived with it so long and it has so many ways we can be into it that it just resonated enough to get up that high. So,
or good. We have exquisite taste in this community,
that
which is
possible
very possible.
Too. That is very possible.
Very possible.
Any other thoughts here? Dead Flowers. No? Okay. All right. You guys ready for number 2?
Yes.
There's applause here for it.
Tumbling Dice. There should be.
This song went to number 7. This one was on my list.
Mine too.
On my ballot.
Yep.
In fact, I didn't even have to think very long. This one was on the list. You know what I mean? It's like Tumbling Dice. Of course, Tumbling Dice. One thing we haven't talked much about the Stones this week is groove.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is you know, like exhibit A of how the Stones could just get a good groove going on a song, right?
Yes. It is my favorite Rolling Stone song, Clear at the Top. It, to me, characterizes all the beauty, decadence, sweat, contradiction, pain, agony, beauty, you know, poetry, love of the Rolling Stones. It's everything I think about when I think about the Rolling Stones. Keith's riff is just like burrowing into the song somewhere. Jagger's over there with the harmony singers doing the thing, and Charlie's playing, and Bill Wyman's there. I mean, it all comes together in this beautiful kind of stew. Paul Hayden.
Did your mom kick you out of the house for this song?
No,
did she tell you to get out of here?
So.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
Yes, she secretly dug this one too, okay. I think, on the other side of the wall. Paul Hayden says, Tumbling Dice is my number one Stone song because it captures everything I love about the Stones. Groove, riffage, Charlie Watts, and combining multiple genres like soul, gospel, and country. It really is a perfect song. Well said. It's just, I mean, it's still to this day when you hear a song every now and then and you turn it up as loud as it'll go and it can still make the hair stand up on your arms even though you heard it 57 million times. That says a lot. Yeah.
This is that kind of song. Absolutely.
Yep.
All right. I see yawning and shrugs in the gallery. So what's going on out here, guys? Come on. It's been a long week, I know.
Yeah.
Mike Wagner, come on over.
I'm just like Patrick. This is my favorite Rolling Stone song. My wife has heard me play this song like a kabillion times. Very loud on the Sams over here. It was actually Mick Taylor playing bass on this
one. Oh, was it? Wow,
yeah.
Cool. I didn't know that.
And I think I wrote it on my thing where I said, what's amazing about this song, when you hear it, it sounds like it was done in one take.
Yeah,
but
right.
It was actually, there's like reels. And I mean, if you've seen the doc, and I highly recommend it, the Stones in Exile doc, they talk about this, and it had a really, really long lifespan. And I've heard it's like up to 150 takes. I mean, it started like in 70, 71 or something like that, and it kind of evolved over time. Because we were talking about this the other night, how like the Stones songs just sort of kind of, they evolved into songs. They didn't really write songs.
Yeah.
They kind of evolved into it, and they would just be like, okay, all of a sudden, like, Tumbling Dice, like they have nothing, 150 takes, 151.
Yeah.
Tumbling Dice.
It had to sort of marinate for a while, right? And become something.
And it's just like the riff, it just sounds like, I always say it sounds like Keith falling out of bed.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
That's good.
I mean, and he fell out of bed, then he went to the basement of Nelcott, and then they finished it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, but you're also right about how I think Mick had a lot to do with the song because all the background singers, like Keith has no patience to organize that stuff.
No. And Keith was, I mean, Mick was way into organizing those kind
of
things.
Right, right.
You know?
And I think we're talking about this the other night too, is that if you've seen the Aretha Franklin documentary, I watched a lot of documentaries, about the Amazing Grace one where she was doing the church in Los Angeles, and you'll see that the Stones are there because they're finishing up Exile, and they are getting like. And if you listen, like on this one, they have the sort of gospel-esque singers in the background, right?
Yes.
I mean, you got all this sort of. Like, that's what's amazing about this. It sounds like it's like one take, and there's like gospel singers. There's Nicky Hopkins on piano again, and just so much going on in the song. Like how they did it, I don't know. And the other thing is like mixed vocals. A lot of people kind of don't like it, I'm fine with it. Mixed vocals are kind of a little lower than normal. Like, you really don't, like, people, like, how many times people read the lyrics, like, I had no idea these were the lyrics of this song, you know what I mean? And they're actually really, really good, too.
Yeah.
So,
agreed.
I mean, this is for me, the quintessential Stone song.
Awesome.
This
totally
is like,
agree.
Awesome.
And
this
for
is
such
so
a
great.
Decadence, we have to live in Paris in a mansion because we're avoiding the tax authorities in Britain for a while.
That's right.
I know. There's your decadence.
Who hasn't
there's your
been
glamour
there?
Right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Who hasn't had that tax problem in their life? Let he who without that tax problem cast the first stone.
That's exactly right.
All right. Come on. There's got to be some more Tumbling Dice peoples out there. No? Oh, all right. Here's what we're going to do. There's one more song. All right. According to math, there's one more song. But before we do that, Patrick, you want to talk about your picks real quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had three songs that we've already heard in my ballot: Tumbling Dice, Dead Flowers, and Paint It Black. I also had Moonlight Mile, to my mind, the best Charlie Watts drum performance that exists on record, anyway. I never saw the Stones except for one time. And I don't remember.
What does that mean?
I just saw him once, and I don't remember too much about Charlie's drumming that night. I picked Sweet Virginia from...
That's such a good pick.
Thank you. From I picked Salt of the Earth from Beggar's Banquet. I just love that tune. I picked Let It Bleed because another one like Tumbling Dice, that's just a very sort of classic, decadent, you know, Stone song. And I, as I mentioned earlier, I picked Fool to Cry as my ballad. And I picked It's All Over Now, the Bobby Womack song, because yeah. I thought a lot of that early Stone stuff where they did the blues covers were so good.
Right.
And I just thought, you know, it should be acknowledged in some way. Maybe I was a little bit too academic about this, but I love that song. And here's my mystery pick is, does anyone here know the song Who's Driving Your Plane? Nope. Okay, it was originally...
Was it that Crazy Pilot?
That's right. It goes. It all goes back to that.
All right.
No, it's a B-side, and I believe the first time it was ever released is on one of those Rolling Stones singles anthology compilations, and it's a fairly obscure song. But if you go listen to it, at the beginning, there's like this crazy riff where it sounds like Keith is untuning one of the strings on his guitar, and it's all about like, where is your mind, baby? You know, like you're being manipulated by the media. You're not thinking for yourself, you know? And so in some ways, it's an early song. It's got some of that satisfaction to it too. But go listen to Who's Driving Your Plane. It's like one of my favorite Stone songs to put on mixtapes and things like that, because you're like, what the hell is this? You know, I've never heard this before, and it's really weird and wild. And just below my top 10, I had Can't You Hear Me Knockin', which yeah. came very close to getting on the top 15. I had Midnight Rambler, which I absolutely love. And then I also had the under-assistant West Coast Promo Man.
Oh,
do you guys
really?
Remember that song?
Really?
Yeah. It was such a great Stones portrait of like, here's this lackey that we have to deal with, who's the squarest dude, you know, in the room, and yeah. he's just working for, you know, my record company and all that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that's what I loved.
All right, my top 10, and again, these are favorites. They're not necessarily
favorites,
what you think are
yeah.
the best songs, but these are favorites.
Yep.
You know, these are chronological. From the early Stones catalog.
Yep.
My favorite, Heart of Stone.
Nice.
Love that song. I love that it's sort of like, you know, R&B-ish and everything. It's just great.
That's such a good pick.
Yeah. Mother's Little Helper.
Oh.
You know, I thought
running for the shelter
yeah,
of the Mother's
That's a pretty
little
provocative
helper, yeah.
song for the time period, I think. Really yep. cool. I got two songs off of Between the Buttons, which I just adore Between the Buttons. She Smiled Sweetly. We're talking about slow, you know, ballads. I just think it's a beautiful song. And Miss Amanda Jones, which was
yes.
mentioned earlier. I did have Sympathy for the Devil.
Yep.
And Monkey Man.
Yep.
Moonlight Mile, which is one of your picks.
There it is.
Man, love that song. Tumbling Dice. Miss You. Nobody has mentioned
no,
this year.
That's
up
a
at
great
all.
Song.
Great hit song,
yeah.
and I just love it. And you know,
very distinct. One of the most distinctive songs. I mean, once
I
you hear that, it can only be one band.
And you know, oftentimes in my life, I've had Puerto Rican girls just dying to meet me. yeah, that's right.
It's the hair.
And then here's the one, waiting for the groans from the crowd here. But I love this song, Undercover of the Night. I think that's an awesome song. I think it's super ambitious and really cool. Yeah. And go back and listen to it with fresh ears.
Yeah.
It's a great song. Now, my next five, my honorable mentions, Get Off My Cloud, Street Fighting Man, Salt of the Earth,
yep.
Give Me Shelter, and Hang Fire.
Hang Fire.
Hang
wow.
Fire.
I love it,
Hang
man.
Fire is really cool because it's like... it's kind of new wavy, which goes back
yeah.
to what I was saying before about how they could kind of adapt with the times and do some interesting things. And it's a good song. So, okay, now, there was talk of one vote songs. There's like a list of one vote songs.
Let's
go
let's around
look at
the
that
room
real quick
yeah.
before we reveal the number
yeah.
one. Here are the songs that got one vote only. And there are many of them. So how are we going to do this? You want me to just read through this real quick?
Yeah, why not?
All right. We're going to go quickly through this, right? One vote songs. Let It Loose. I Don't Know Why. Memory Motel.
Mm.
I'm Free. Must Be Hell. Jigsaw Puzzle. That's a good one. Just My Imagination, cover song. Let Me Go, Mixed Emotions, later period Stones. Saint of Me, She Comes in Colors. She Smiled Sweetly.
There it
that
is.
That's my one vote.
Yeah.
Play With Fire only got one vote.
One vote.
Man,
how weird is
that's
that?
That's a good one. Parachute Woman, Neighbors, Dance Little Sister, Connection, Around and Around, Backstreet Girl, Child of the Moon, Far Away Eyes, Flip the Switch, Heaven, I Am Waiting, I Can't Be Satisfied, Heartbreaker.
Ah.
I like that song. I thought about that.
Was that a Tim vote?
Do, do, Heartbreaker.
Going to a Go-Go, Who's Driving Your Plane, Bite Off My Head, Ride On Baby, Champagne and Reefer, Slave. What is that one?
The Boudoir Stomp.
The Boudoir Stomp. Okay, I
don't know
that.
Where that's from.
Yeah, I don't know. Thief of the Night, Tops, Worried About You. She Smiled Sweetly's on here twice.
Oh,
did it get one vote or did it get two votes?
I guess it got two votes.
Oh,
then. Never mind. Or I wrote it down twice. Right. We don't know.
One of the two. Oh, here's a good one. Here's a good underappreciated song. Little TNA. That's a
oh,
good
yeah.
song. If You Can't Rock Me, Down Home Girl, and Angry from
that's
Bud
right.
Birch. All right. Now.
The accounting firm.
That's right.
We'll be in touch.
All right. Now I would like the gallery here to guess what do you think was voted the number one favorite Rolling Stones song? Is Gimme Shelter from Let It Bleed.
Woo!
Applause, yes.
Number
one. Please applaud. Number one. From Let It Bleed, 1969. That was the opening track on the album. And I will say, just the opening of the song is so recognizable, right? It's just perfect, right? You hear that, you just know you're in for something.
Yeah.
Listen to this song, right?
Absolutely. The interesting thing about Gimme Shelter in this particular countdown, Jim, was that it was the number one song by 24 votes.
Wow.
So it was far and away the runaway leader. It was clear as soon as the votes started coming in that everybody had it on their ballot. And I, you know, as you mentioned, the countdowns we've done, I don't think anyone has ever been that far. I mean, we had a few that were like five or six ahead, but 24 yeah. is an astounding
it's
margin.
A beat down. So
it really resonated with,
yeah.
Yeah, it resonated with our
You guys
people.
Like the song, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. How many people had in this room had this on their top 10 ballot? Yeah.
There you go.
Most of the hands
yep.
were up.
Paul Hayden says, and thank you, Paul, for your comments. Gimme Shelter perfectly captures the end of the 60s. If I had to pick one song that captures the feeling of the apocalypse, this is it.
Yeah, and there's a reason why it's used. I mean, Scorsese in particular, but yeah. I think beyond him even, just it's used in like movie soundtracks. It's used anything to sort of set the tone for that turbulent time.
That's right.
In history, right? It's like, Gimme Shelter, you know?
Trying to find a way, to make sense of the madness.
Yeah.
In essence, yeah.
And there's a lot going on in that song, too.
Oh, my goodness.
It definitely, it takes you on a ride, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of different passages in the song, a lot of different, sort of feelings that you may have listening to it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. When they were writing Let It Bleed and recording it, they were also, in some stages in a lot of changes. They were about to tour America. They were doing all these kind of different things. But to me, it evokes something really timeless. To me, it always feels like one of those songs that's always kind of been there, one of those tablets down from the mountain of rock and roll.
People want to discuss Gimme Shelter. Sam's coming up here. I want to say, too, I double check this. I triple check this. I believe this to be true. This was never released as a single.
Wow. Never knew that.
Yeah. This was just an album track.
An album cut.
Know what I'm saying?
Yeah. One of those AOR tracks.
Kind of amazing. Again, I think for this band in particular that has had so many hit singles, right? That the one that is the runaway favorite was not one of those.
Amazing.
Right? Yeah.
Totally amazing.
So going back to Mike Snyder's earlier point from a couple days ago, this was the song that had the primetime premiere for Call of Duty Black Ops when that game came out in November of 2010. And I can vividly remember, because it wasn't during a football game. I was with my brother. We were watching television. And during one of the late night shows, this ad came on. And immediately, I think it was my brother who was more hooked to the song than I was. He was like, oh my God, what was that song? That was incredible. And I remember he ran upstairs to his computer and he went on YouTube and he found the track and he was hooked immediately. And then, of course, he wanted to buy the game, but we were 11 and 12, but we couldn't get the game then. But
always get what
in the Call of Duty franchise, though. Right. In the Call of Duty franchise, this was a big deal because before then it was, I think they tackled the World War, the World Wars, and then they also tackled Modern Warfare, and now they were tackling Cold War, Vietnam War, and Bay of Pigs in one game. So a lot of the fan base was hugely invested in this. And I'm reading this Billboard article about the effort it took to get Gimme Shelter in that ad, where they had to actually fly. They had to fly, I think, either the Activision crew came to them, the game developers, or they went to Activision to show the ad on a secure laptop to show, hey, this is how we're utilizing this song in this ad. And they actually let them make any changes or edits to it because it was such a big deal. And it actually, sure enough, it drove up the song on the Billboard Hot 100 that week, I think, when it came out. So, yes, it clearly had an impact and brought some much-needed popularity back to this really amazing track.
Sam, that's such a great point. And I think one thing we haven't really touched on, directly tonight is how shrewd of a businessman that Mick Jagger was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a shrewd businessman from the beginning, and he understood, from the London School of Economics, right. Whatever, to where I can position myself and my art and not compromise it to still get the best deal for myself.
Yeah.
So it's a great, great point.
But I mean, but I just remember thinking back, right? This song came out, it was 2010, so it came out, 40 years prior, I think, 40 or 50, math. And just seeing my 11-year-old brother his jaw just dropped when he heard that. It was like something else. It was really cool to hear it that many decades later. Yeah.
Yeah. It's unreal. All right.
Beautiful, good Sam. Job. Thank you, man.
Bud Verge. Bud Verge wants to come up and say something.
Love it. He's a dirty, greasy hippie. But we love him.
Imagine laying in bed at 2 o'clock in the morning in late 1960, eight or nine, and a phone call comes in and can you come down to the studio and sing? And it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm pregnant. I don't really want to do that. You got to give credit to Mary Clayton.
Yeah,
on this
there
song.
It is.
That is the glue that holds this song together. She has the most prominent female vocal on any Rolling Stones song, up until the new record where Lady Gaga has a prominent vocal. But just holding down that whole the whole vibe of the song is Mary Clayton, and she's just the unsung hero of that song. And the way she's yelling out, you know, rape, murder. And the song is so dark and so dark and so dark. But then all of a sudden at the end, there's like a little light at the end of the tunnel. They change the lyrics. And it gets positive again. You know, love, it's just a kiss away. Yeah. And it's so beautiful. And that's what makes the song, it takes you through so many emotions at the end. It gives you that little tiny cherry. And that's what makes the song so spectacular.
Wow. Well said,
good
bud.
Point. Good point.
Oh, my God.
I would say, though, that she's a fairly well-sung hero of this song in that she gets tons of credit. Like, she's known. Mary Clayton's known.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, she had, you know, not just for her own career as a singer, but because this song, this, like, launched her, you know, higher, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to say quickly, too, Mike Wagner on his ballot called this as the number one song.
Really?
He said, this may be the number one song for the countdown. That is my guess.
Good job.
How did you know that, Mike?
$20. I bribed the accounting firm of Foster, Foster, and Foster, yeah. And they are now with Arthur Anderson and out of business.
And, Foster, Foster, and Foster will cut you a check. Post-dated third-party check.
Also, if you haven't seen it, there's a doc. I talk about it all the time because it's worth watching. Is 20 Feet from Stardom. And it has... the bit that Mary Clayton does isolated.
Right.
And it has Mick listening to it and it has Mary listening to it. And she's like, she knows she's a badass.
Yeah.
There's nothing. I mean, it's a really cool, there's some people, you know, you watch it again, but she's like, so cool. She's so cool. Yeah. And I can't recommend watching this enough.
What made you think this would be number one?
Cause it's so great. But I mean,
yeah, but that's what I thought about Tumbling Dice.
Yeah. But it's got more, cultural.
Yeah.
It's kind of all over, right? I mean, that riff is...
It's a bigger song. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like, I agree
about
that.
Moonlight Mile? what about that?
I think I wrote it in the thing is like, also what sort of made Keith do that lick is Mick was filming a movie with Anita Pallenberg.
That's right.
Who was Keith's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Who was Brian Jones' girlfriend before Keith stole her?
She was so faithful.
Mary Ann Faithful.
Yeah.
So that was like, and I remember reading somewhere, it was a really stormy night, and Keith just picked up the guitar and wrote that. And like how they came up with it is just, and Keith plays all the guitars on it. Hmm. Nicky Hopkins plays piano. Let's get that in there.
I've heard of them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, let's if you took away Mary Clayton, which it's really hard to do, but it would still be great.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh,
it would still be great.
Yeah.
But then you put Mary Clayton on top of it, and you're just like, I mean, it's just off to the... I mean, it's like one of the greatest. I mean, there's like Mount Rushmore songs, right? And this is like really, really rarefied air.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. First off, any last comments on Gimme Shelter? Mike Snyder.
Okay, so the 5-day football game is 21-11 now.
All right.
I did some in-depth reporting on this song, and I pulled off the shelf of my shelf this 3 or 4 year old Rolling Stones top 100 Rolling Stones songs, and believe it or not, "Gimme Shelter" was number one in there.
Really? Wow.
So while our overall choices are quite different than the public, this resonates across the board.
Oh, so interesting.
And I think that's because all critics loved it and musicians loved it because mm-hmm. they're the ones that made those choices. But obviously, well, there are musicians in this room, but most of us are fans and consumers, and we love it too. So, I mean, I think it just crosses. It's so good. It crosses everybody's. It checks all the boxes for so many of us.
That's a great point.
I think it's a good point. Great point. Yeah.
And go Jayhawks.
There must have been a safety in the game.
Mike Wagner.
I remember during the Hootenanny days, Frank Muffin played this, and Justice was over at Frank Muffin's house.
Yes.
And she did the middle section.
Nice.
And I was sitting there with my jaw on the floor. I swear to God, that night Justice did that, I was just like,
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Any other Gimme Shelter comments? Anyone? Anyone? Okay. So now this is the open mic here for the airing of grievances. If anybody wants to come up and talk about a favorite Rolling Stone song that did not make the top 15, this is your chance right now. Tim Hoffman.
Not a grievance, because I really didn't expect, even though I picked this song, it was the first song I put on the list. And I didn't know if anyone else would pick it, but it didn't really matter because, like, this song, I'm talking about Heartbreaker.
Oh, yeah.
I think it all stems from a friend of my older brother's who growing up who was, like, a big Rolling Stones fan, and he was also like the best Mick Jagger impersonator I've ever seen in my life. And he and my older brother and another friend had an apartment. This was like one of those rare moments in time where, like, your senior year of high school, your parents let you move out of the house and move into an apartment with your two best friends. So my parents let my brother do that. So we were hanging out there all the time, and Todd Kiefaber would sing Rolling Stones nonstop and just like strut around in the apartment with in his like bathrobe. And this was one of the songs that he sang was Heartbreaker. And I was probably 13 or something like that. And I remember he changed the lyrics to the song where, like, the police in New York City chased. And then he used my nickname and chased, you know, Hoff Dog through the park.
Hoff Dog.
and that made me, like, put away all of the, like, the Beatles or the Rolling Stones thing that was kind of kicking around my high school in that day. I'm like, well, the Beatles do what the Beatles do, but the Beatles don't do what the Rolling Stones do. And you're talking about groove a couple days ago. Like, I mean, I love both of them, but there's a part there where the outer edges of the Venn diagram where they don't cross over. Like, you're not going to hear the Beatles doing, like, Tumbling Dice or Gimme Shelter. They just don't play that kind of song.
Right.
But the Rolling Stones do, and they do it really well. So you don't have to pick between the Rolling Stones or the Beatles.
Yeah. Heartbreaker has a Beatles connection.
Is it Billy Preston?
Oh, yeah.
And I, but that's all I want to say. Right. I like Heartbreaker. Not a grievance, but I love that song.
Yeah, and I will really quickly say there are three songs that missed by one vote. She's a Rainbow, Honky Tonk Women, and Can You Hear Me Knocking? And then Moonlight Mile and Happy missed by two votes out of the top
15. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
Hang on, sir.
I've got you covered. Nick Scalera.
Right, so I wanted to talk about a song that was a number one hit in 1967. And we talked a little bit about the fact that the Stones did a lot of different genres. They did country, they did disco even at one point, but this song is in a genre that's very dear to my heart, that is Baroque pop.
Oh.
And the song, of course, also launched a beloved chain of restaurants.
Ruby Tuesday.
That song is Ruby Tuesday. Wow. And I think it's a beautiful song. It is a beautiful love song. That song. It's it might have been on Julie's list, I don't know, but it's that I do think the Stones were able to pull off the softer side, and Ruby Tuesday is just a gorgeous song. And I think it should have been on the list. I don't know. That's all I wanted to say.
That's just a great song.
And
it really is.
It includes Brian Jones playing the alto recorder.
Oh, that's
not
right.
Not the soprano or the bass recorder, but the alto recorder.
The alto recorder.
Yes. Brian Jones was always good for the random instrument.
He was great.
Yeah.
No, it's great. It's a great song. It's a great song. It's on the U.S. version of Between the Buttons, and just fits in perfectly with
it's
those
beautiful.
Songs. That's a lovely record. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
So, first of all, thank you, Nick, for Ruby Tuesday.
Yeah.
Good call there. 120 hours of drinking now. You know, Tattoo You. You had Start Me Up, which is not my favorite off the album. Little TNA, which got one vote, and I have to say I did not vote at all, so I probably shouldn't even be up here. But due to the time that was involved to actually do this, but also waiting on a friend.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's Jim, great.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. That's a great one.
Hang Fire.
Hang Fire.
and many more in that album. I'm just surprised there is none on there.
Yeah.
And then we talk about the different genres, and I have to give a plug to Emotional Rescue, right?
Yep.
Because that was and go back something that was said several days ago. You know, you can tell it's a Rolling Stone song. So Emotional Rescue, musically,
right,
very huge departure from what they'd done. But you could tell almost immediately, like, this is the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, totally agree.
It's, absolutely. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And, you know, I think it's a great shout, Rob. I mean, we got together earlier on Saturday morning, you know, as a team building exercise for this. We did some zip lining and some...
Yeah.
Falling backwards stuff.
And, trust falls?
Yeah. We broke into small teams and brainstormed and all that. But through all this Rolling Stone stuff, when I was listening to all these songs and writing everything up and tallying the votes, Waiting on a Friend was the riff that stuck in my brain the whole time. It was do, 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 do. Like the whole time. That just kept in my mind. It was really weird.
It's an amazing song, right?
Yeah, it really is.
And I think you and I were talking about this before, too. It's like that rare song that's about friendship,
yep,
right? It's not a love song, right? It's about friendship, right? And that's a great thing. And I feel it in this room. now another, Rob, another song from that same era that I haven't heard mentioned at all is Shattered.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
Shubidubi.
Another great one.
Yeah. I mean, come on, Shattered.
Yeah. That's another one. You instantly hear it, and you're like, that's a Rolling Stones. That's Mick Jagger. Yeah. Yeah.
But so cool.
Oh,
like such a cool song.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And they actually incorporated a little bit of rap and a little bit of that sort of sound. Yeah.
But it also speaks to the absolute breadth of the catalog.
Right.
Overall.
Yeah.
And I think when you talk about huge catalogs, people think about the Beatles, obviously. But yeah, thank you. I'm trying to stay in the house tonight, you know? So I got to throw you a bone or two, Mike Wagner. Yeah. But the Stones are right there.
Yeah,
I mean they're really right there.
Sure. Yep, absolutely.
No, you know, all right. I'll show myself out now, Mike.
All right. Anybody else? Songs to mention? Mike Snyder.
Well, I just want to riff on what Rob said a little bit here, that, and say, there's like two sides to this situation. One, we're too cool to pick older Stone songs.
Right.
We don't want to put these, we think of them as new. They're 30 plus years old, right? But you don't want to put Miss You on your thing because then you're leaving off, Get Off My Cloud or whatever. I had some on. You don't. But I only save a few spaces for that, you know.
Right.
You know,
for,
and once I knew Julie was going to do Waiting on a Friend, I'm like, I skipped that and put Get Off My Cloud on mine, you know. The other side is when you start looking and listening, if you took time and listened to these, you're like, how can I? These older songs are just have stood the test of longer time than Hang Fire has or Waiting on a Friend has, and I.
Right.
So it's I don't know, it's a dichotomy. It's a dilemma, you know? So.
It is. And, you know, I think the Stones probably, number one, because of their longevity, but number two, for other reasons, are one of the most interesting bands to divide into eras if you're into that kind of thing, right? There's so many Stones eras. Like, if you really wanted to get into it, you can really divide it up into a lot of different sections. And I think that's pretty fascinating about the group. And you know, it's like I was saying earlier, for a band that came from these dirty blues roots, like their thing was to make this Sunday night residency at a, you know, small club in London, the most rowdy night of, you know, all, and yet they became so sophisticated. It's pretty amazing.
Right. Well, I totally agree with that.
What everybody has done today, you know, or this week, I should say, has shown how they have stood the test of time.
Yeah.
Because I mean, here they're dealing with, a lot of us think they're done when Charlie Watts passes away. They put out an album. It's number one in the UK. I don't know if it's number one here, but we talk about it. And we've got votes for songs on that album on this event tonight. And, you know, you just got to give them their due for, you know, being so not only prolific, but being able to continue on, you know, and for whatever that's worth. I mean, it's worth something.
It absolutely is.
I mean, look at the Animals, for example, right? Yeah. So the Animals and the Stones were doing blues covers at the same time. And you could make the argument that maybe the Animals did them better, right?
Sure.
But when it came time to, like, write your own songs and, you know, create your own body of work. Animals. There was no, you know, there was no comparison, right? Yeah, I'm not saying Eric Burden didn't do some cool stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, there's just no comparison, right?
First off, I know they were really close, but Can't You Hear Me Knockin'?
Yep.
I think we need to talk about that briefly because Charlie Watts, brilliant on that song.
Yep.
And I know we've sort of talked about Charlie, but it is hard to understate how important Charlie was to that band.
Oh, yeah.
Because Mick and Keith would have killed each other, it wouldn't have been over. But, like, Charlie held them together, right? Why he wanted to stick around, I'll never know, because there's, like, I don't think there's ever a person in a bigger rock and roll band who gave less of a care about being in that huge rock and roll band.
I think he said it was a good gig. Like, it was, yeah.
It's probably the best gig I can get right now. Yeah.
I mean, that is just, I was really surprised it was on the list. I'm glad it was close, but that riff is just quintessential. And then the whole second half of the song was one take, which is very unlike the Stones. And Mick Taylor made them a far better band. And they were never really the same after they were really never the same after Exile, but they were really never the same after Mick Taylor left. I mean, to be honest about it. I mean, I love, speaking of Emotional Rescue, off that album, Dance Part 1 and 2, I recommend that highly. That's really a great song. And the second song, and I know we've just for you, Julie, Moonlight Mile is the best romantic. And that's not, there's just so much. It's like the one song where Mick is not kind of Mick.
Yeah.
You know,
I love that song. Do you know what
I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, like he kind of has this, like, all the country songs, there's Mick kind of putting on country.
Yeah.
You know, and he's kind of like, he's kind of like joking with it. And it's kind of like, it's kind of sad because it's kind of a joke to him, all the country songs, you know. But Moonlight Mile is probably the most pure Mick song he ever did, maybe.
Yeah, it's great.
I mean, and it's like that line, I'm just living to be lying by your side.
Yeah.
I mean, that's brilliant. And it's like, I can't recommend that song enough. I'm glad it was close, but it really should have been in the top.
It was definitely in my top 10.
Yeah. So anyway, those are my two. So.
Sweet. All right. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, guys. This is great.
Thank you, Mike. Julie Snyder.
I just have one quick comment. I don't want to be blamed for Mike changing his list by looking at my list.
I thought you were just taking responsibility for Mike in general, which is a whole different thing.
No, I can't. I can't do that.
No, nobody can.
All right.
We all together have to do it.
Sam Whisker, everyone.
Since I got here late, was Under My Thumb the first song or any of the first songs that you played?
No, Under My Thumb hasn't been mentioned tonight either.
It has not been mentioned. What
the
era
of greed shall begin. I'm really bummed that Under My Thumb was not put on this list. It's a song that I heard way too late. I took this, I told you guys this a few years ago, but when I was wrapping up college, one of the classes I took was a rock styles class, just like a senior class that you could take. And we had a whole week dedicated to the Stones. And the first track that my professor played was Under My Thumb. And I had never heard it before up until that point. And then it just went into my circulation, my playlist circulation for months, I think, towards the end of my senior year. But it's a wonderful song. And
it's a fascinating Stones song.
Really underrated, too. God. It's so good.
You're right.
And it's a good walking song. I did a lot of walking where I went to school. And it was just the right thing to, like, walk to every day to class.
Another one that really spoke to the cultural shift that the Stones were a part of, right?
Yeah,
it totally did.
Exactly. Yeah. And then the second comment I wanted to make, about a day or so ago, I made a note about how the Beatles and the Stones are competing with each other, and I just realized in this moment sitting down that they are still competing with each other.
Nah.
Hackney Diamonds came out in October 2023, and what do you know? A new Beatles song comes out in November 2023. I mean, imagine that. Perfect. It doesn't stop.
Weird. All right. Rob Gates again.
Sorry, yeah, one more.
Okay.
One more.
Okay.
So released as a double A-side single with Ruby Tuesday, Let's Spend the Night Together.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Which we mentioned earlier as a David Bowie cover.
Yeah, that's right.
But as a Stones song, again, that's another, you know, sort of seminal tune.
Absolutely.
No real guitar on that song, though, either, right?
There was a ton of songs that got, like, 5 to 6 votes. You know, they were kind of in that middle distance that just... Some people loved, and it didn't, you know, for whatever reason.
No, I know, because there's so many.
I know. That's amazing. It's crazy. 116.
They had to change the lyrics on Let's Spend the Night Together, right? Was it for Ed Sullivan or a different show? Ed Sullivan? Yeah, to Let's Spend Some Time Together.
Spend Some Time Together.
Yeah.
Question for you two. If we go back to the Beatles, when we did this to the Beatles, was there as much songs left off? As many grievances aired about songs left off the list.
There were far less, actually. Yeah. It was really interesting.
That's what I think.
Far less. Yeah, and far less votes, too, which is very interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know if I want to take this here exactly, but you and I had a conversation a while back. This, again, speaks to the breadth of the catalog, that the Stones, they had one Critics' Darling album, of course, with Exile on Main Street.
Yep.
But did they have that one album that like everybody has in their collection, like think of like Dark Side of the Moon,
right
or Born to Run, I don't know, Sergeant Pepper's or whatever. The White Album probably is a better example from the Beatles, right? Or actually probably Abbey Road, but anyway, that one like album that everybody had in their collection.
Really.
And I don't know that they really had that. I mean, you could make a case for Tattoo You as much as any other album, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And a lot of people had like Hot Rocks, you know, the compilation.
Right. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's an amazing compilation.
But I think it shows it because there's like so much great music spread over all these records that they didn't have that like one standout album.
Great point.
You know,
great point.
Popularly, I'm saying.
Yep. Yeah. You're right. Yep.
Yeah. Okay, any other songs real quick? Nobody's mentioned 19th Nervous Breakdown.
Oh,
that's a really good one, too.
I'm on my 21st.
That's right. All right. This has been great fun.
Oh, and my God. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
We did it! Yeah.
Yes, this is the list. This is the official list now. Pack it up in that briefcase.
It
goes to the National Archives.
Lock it away, we'll get it copyrighted.
Yes, that's right. All right. Thanks very much for everybody who came out and gave me beer. And everybody who voted.
Thank you, everyone who voted and who's listening to these podcasts. Thank you so much.
So there's talk about doing another holiday countdown. I think we may do our third annual holiday countdown. So listen for that. And then sometime in the new year, we'll do some other artist countdown.
And you can't
thing.
Repeat songs on the holiday countdown.
No, you can't.
So, oh, I love it.
It gets harder and harder as it goes.
It's going to get tough.
All right. I guess that's about it. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And you guys are the beautiful audience.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Talk to you later. Thank you.
Well, baby used to stay out all night long. She made me cry. She done me wrong. She hurt my eyes open. That's no lie. Table's turning now. Her time to cry. Because I used to.
watch a lot of documentaries.